Blog Talk Radio.
How y'all doing? Alright, shut her off. A lot of good stuff to talk about today. So, Donald Trump decided to fucking screw over everybody in public view yet again in terms of his campaign spending here. He's doing some really clever tricks that show what he's all about. He's the billionaire who just can't seem to get enough of nickel and diming everybody. I mean, I guess it might be a trait of many billionaires. But wait until you hear the story about what he did with the rent at his Trump properties when somebody else started paying for it. So we'll talk about that. Eric Trump was campaigning for his daddy, and he shoved his foot directly in his mouth. Have a really hilarious story on that front. Can't wait to talk about that. Wait until you see what he blames for stagnant wages. It's incredible. Later on in the show, we have some terrifying news here from the International Business Times. I've been trying to get to this story for a few days now, but another effect of climate change that's not being spoken about very often, but it could be a huge downside. And then Republican Representative Steve King has some thoughts for us on Guantanamo Bay. And oh boy, is that bad. I mean, that guy, he's one of the worst of the worst. He's right up there with Louis Gohmert in terms of IQ. And you guys know how Louis Gohmert is doing in that department. So let's get started. And we'll lead here with Trump himself and his new antics. So for a while, Donald Trump was bragging that he's self-funding his campaign, and that's what makes him so great, and he's not beholden to the donors, and he's not a puppet. Well, that was not true, but it was more true than it is today, if that makes any sense, because during the primary season, he did raise less money from private donors. Well, you know, as soon as the primary was over, he did a 180 and said, oh, yeah, no, now I'm totally going to raise all this money from donors. I mean, it's kind of a crazy thing to say and do because you just undercut the entire message of your campaign. You're able to make a case that you're a populist beforehand, and then today, now you can't make that case in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, it was a weird thing to do, and it shows that Donald Trump is really kind of flailing all over the place, and he's just fucking shooting from the hip here. Well, now we have a story that further proves this because he's so brazen and so open with his con artistry, if that indeed is something that's a word and a thing you can say. So SV Date reports here. After bragging for a year about how cheaply he was running his campaign, Donald Trump is spending more freely now that other people are contributing, particularly when the beneficiary is himself. Trump nearly quintupled the monthly rent his presidential campaign pays for its headquarters at Trump Tower to $169,758 in July when he was raising funds from donors, compared with March when he was self-funding his campaign. The rent jumped even though he was paying fewer staff in July than he did in March. The Trump campaign paid Trump Tower Commercial LLC $35,000 $35,458,000 in March, the same amount it had been paying since last summer, and had 197 paid employees and consultants. In July, it paid 172 employees and consultants. So look at that jump, man. It's so clear that he's scamming everybody. So 35,458 before. Now he's paying fewer employees, and it's 169,758 because now he's like, come to Papa with the big donor money, and whoop, look at that, I put some of it in my own pocket. Now, look, don't get me wrong, if he had increased it a little bit, I wouldn't be doing this segment because it's understandable. If you, hey, I'm paying it out of my pocket, it's my property, yada, yada. You know, I why would I, you know, put a profit margin on myself? That seems weird, paying it from me to me. It's, you know, all these issues where you can get, say, oh, obviously it makes sense for him to pay less when it's himself. But when you, what's the term they use? Quintupled? When you quintuple the amount? I mean, come on, dude. It's so obvious that you're trying to nickel and dime your way through this thing, and you are doing this for personal gain. And understand, this isn't the only example. Like, it's not like that's it and pound the gavel. There are countless other examples. So they go on in this very article to explain how he paid himself for, he took the donor money and paid the donor money to himself about $425,000 for his airplane. Now, they say it burns about $10,000 worth of fuel every hour, but still, when you do the math, it doesn't add up. He didn't fly $425,000, you know, worth of airtime. So that's another area. They say when it comes to his restaurants and when it comes to his golf clubs that he's paying himself, for example, $125,000 to his Trump Restaurants LLC. Now, he can fire back and say, yeah, but you know what? I did some campaign events, and I catered it with my own restaurant. So that's understandable. That's fine. But again, when you get into the details and you crunch the numbers, he's way overpaying himself. So what's he doing here? Well, it's obvious. He's finding a way to use this campaign to personally enrich himself and skirt on the edge of the law. That's exactly what's happening. And there's not a clearer example in the world than, oh, I'm going to pay myself, when the donors pay, it's going to be about $170,000 for the rent. When I pay, it's about $35,000. I mean, can you make it any more obvious? Again, if it was the difference between $35,000 and $45,000, would I be doing this story? No. But when it's that big of a difference, it's like he's not even trying to hide it, and he's just waiting to get caught. And that's exactly what's happening here. And it's really sad, it's really pathetic, and it's Trump 101. And instead of all of us getting used to it and going, what do you mean, that's just who he is, we should all call it out and sustain the outrage over this. People always get outrage over Trump, oftentimes for silly things, like, oh, my God, he used naughty words. He's an adult. He's running for president. I'm fine with him fucking using bad words. Are you kidding me? That's not – he's not appealing to 13-year-olds. Who gives a fuck? So I'm fine with that, and don't do PC outrage against him. But this is genuine outrage. This is legitimate. This is something you can talk about and should talk about because it exposes his character. So this is Donald Trump in a nutshell here, and you think he's not doing this in other ways as well? You know, you think he's not finding 1,001 ways to nickel and dime people and finding ways to continue to personally enrich himself? I mean, there was a story about how apparently that he was considering bringing back The Apprentice even if he won the White House. So do an Apprentice show from the White House. What the fuck is that about? This is unprecedented in so many ways, and it shows you, it all goes back to that story we did where, you know, it's basically been proven that he didn't expect to get this far. Now that he is this far, he's like, I don't know, I'll just fucking ride this bitch into the rocks, and whatever happens, happens. Yeah, pay myself more money for when his donor's paying for it. Yeah, I don't give a fuck. Talk about maybe doing The Apprentice in the White House. The list goes on and on of the ways in which this is ridiculous and ludicrous and unbecoming of a presidential candidate. Okay, so that's Donald Trump for you. I think I managed to avoid doing any stories on his son or his son's the entire campaign season here. But now I can no longer avoid it. I got one of his sons here. You could tell that Donald Trump is his dad based on this comment that he made here. So let me go ahead and break this down for you. Trump was campaigning for his daddy, and he gave us a hilariously stupid comment on Fox and Friends while discussing the issue of refugees. He said the following, quote, "I mean, wages have been stagnant for the last 15 years, and it's because you have, you know, Syrian refugees coming in. It's because you have, you know, thousands of people coming over the border. I mean, Americans are suffering because of it." And that's his point. This dude just blames Syrian refugees for stagnant wages in the United States of America. All right, let's look at some facts here. Syria's civil war started in the year 2011. Wages have been stagnant. They've been flat since the 1980s. Wow, that's so stupid. I think you outstupid your daddy. That's unreal. Now, furthermore, how many Syrian refugees have we actually taken? You would say, or I'm sure there are right-wingers who would say, well, millions, obviously. I mean, yeah, hello, we had a liberal democratic administration. They're basically Muslim, Marxist, Kenyan atheists over there. So they're going to help out their brethren over there in Syria. And they're letting it's open borders, man. Open season, man. It's crazy. White people are being hunted by these Syrian refugees. So what do you think? Millions? I mean, Angela Merkel's taking in literally millions into Germany. So, I mean, what? Do we do more than her because the right wing is so scared of the refugees here? Well, no, it wasn't millions. Ooh, okay. Okay, so right wingers could take a deep breath there. It's okay. You're going to be safe. But it was about 800,000, 900,000, right? Nope. Nope. Come on now, really? 500,000, clearly. Nope. Nope. 200,000. Nope. 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 100,000. Nope. 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 In total, we've only taken 11,000 Syrian refugees. The dude blamed stagnating wages, which have been happening since the 1980s, on 11,000 people that came in post-2011. Now, okay, look, if you're interpreting what he's saying fairly here, well, I mean, to interpret it fairly, you just have to write off the part about Syrian refugees and say, okay, but it's those undocumented immigrants and the fact that all these Mexicans are coming over the border, and you know how they are, and they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people, as Eric's daddy said. Well, no, it also turns out that as of right now, net immigration from Mexico is net zero. Okay, we got to stop with this fucking scapegoating, man. Did you know that, I think it was in Alabama, they decided, there was, you know, a locality or a county that decided, we're sick of this shit. We don't want any more illegal immigrants, illegal aliens. So what did they do? They basically did Mitt Romney's idea was of self-deportation, make the conditions so bad that people basically self-deport. And that's what they did. They ended up kicking out all the undocumented immigrants. The second they did it, they were like, oh, motherfucker, what have we done? Get them back here. Get them back here right now. Because apparently, it turns out, a lot of these people do a lot of jobs that need to be done in society, and other people didn't want to fucking do them. They didn't want to fucking do them. And when they gave other people the opportunity, they were like, I still don't want to fucking do them. I don't want to do them. So eventually, they brought back in more undocumented immigrants. So it goes to show you, you know, look, if it's a criminal, I have no problem deporting them. In fact, I'm right there with you. Deport the ones who do violent crimes, sure. But if it's somebody who's an undocumented immigrant, they've been here for years, they're a contributing member of society, why the fuck would you just irrationally be against them? But this shows right here, it is, at its core, irrational. It is scapegoating. I don't know, wages been stagnant because of them goddamn illegal aliens and the Syrian refugees. Except it hasn't been, and this really is scapegoating 101. It's the oldest trick in the book. Get, you know, middle-class white people and poor white people to hate middle-class black people and Hispanic people and poor black people and Hispanic people. And all the while that's going on, what happens? Billionaires run out the back door with all the money. The rich run out the back door with all the money. So you guys fight amongst yourselves. Oh, yeah, hey, white guy, it's those poor blacks and those poor Hispanics. They're really the problem, right? Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm on your side, right? Then they run out the back door with all the money. Dude, we just did a story. Donald Trump, when he was self-funding his campaign more, what happened? He would rent the properties and pay Trump Tower Commercial LLC $35,458. When he decided to take more donor money, all of a sudden, look at that, he jacked up the price. He quintupled it to $169,758. In other words, he's robbing people, dog. So as he's robbing people, they go, oh, my, fucking Syrian refugees. Fucking Syrian refugees. Look at this, robbing everybody, and the refugees taking everybody's jobs, and they're the problem. They're bringing down America because what they're doing is unfair. Pay no attention to the fact that I'm fucking stealing from people, too. Oh, well, don't look over here. Seriously, the Syrian refugees, they're the problem. Wages have been stagnant. Blame who? The Syrian refugees. Goddamn immigrants. You're picking on the powerless in society and acting like they're powerful. Again, the oldest trick in the book, it's a sad, xenophobic, bigoted way to scapegoat, and it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, seriously, reflect on how stupid that is. You're going to blame Syrian refugees for stagnating wages. Stagnating wages have been happening since the 80s. They started coming in 2011, and there's only 11,000 of them. This is unreal. This is on a whole new level of stupid to the point where Eric Trump may have beaten his daddy. Okay. All right, now we're going to go to Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly going at it here a little bit. A little surprising that they would argue with each other since I believe they're fairly sexually attracted to one another. Donald Trump was asked by Bill O'Reilly to name a single policy he would implement to reduce crime, and he couldn't answer.
You have in Chicago a problem. Did you know that murders in Chicago are up 50% this year from last year?
I know it. I know it very well.
And they can't. And they can't solve it. They can't solve it. State of Illinois, city of Chicago, can't do it.
Well, you know why they can't solve it? Because everybody thinks they have the right people in charge.
So, all right. So specifically, how do you do it? How do you do it?
I know police in Chicago. If they were given the authority to do it, they would get it done.
How?
You have unbelievable... How? By being very much tougher than they are right now. They're right now not tough. I mean, I could tell you this very long and quite boring story, but when I was in Chicago, I got to meet a couple of very top police. I said, how do you stop this? How do you stop this? If you were put in charge to a specific person, do you think you could stop it? He said, Mr. Trump, I'd be able to stop it in 1 week. And I believed him 100%.
How? Did he tell you how he would be able to stop it?
No, he wants to use tough police tactics.
Would you have a warrant to arrest
him? People being killed.
Can't beat them up. You have to have a warrant to arrest him.
All I know is this. I went to a top police officer in Chicago who is not the police chief, and I could see by the way he was dealing with his people. He was a rough, tough guy. They respected him greatly. I said, how do you think you do it? He said, Mr. Trump, within 1 week, we could stop much of this.
But he didn't tell you exactly precisely how. Because that's
no, and I didn't ask him because I'm not the mayor of Chicago. But I tell you what, I sent his name in and I said, you probably should hire this guy because you have, you know the expression, you have nothing to lose? Look at what's going on in Chicago. It's horrible. This guy felt totally confident that he could stop it in a very short period of time.
So
it's
nationwide,
a little bit like we could win the war a lot quicker if we'd let our generals do the job properly. This was a man.
But you have to have a strategy, though. What I'm trying to get is you have to have a strategy.
I'm sure he's got a strategy.
Okay, but you're going to be, if you're president, you're going to have your strategy.
Oh, that was so sad. Bill O'Reilly, who is your friend, and he's on your side, and he's trying to help you and do propaganda for you, as evidenced by every other segment he's done with you. He's throwing a softball down the center of the plate, and you can't fucking hit it. You can't do it. You can't do it. He's like, okay, but I'm asking you how. How would you reduce crime in places like Chicago? How? How? Well, you know, look, you got to understand, you got to let the police do what they do. He's like, okay, I get that. How? Give me a specific policy. How does that happen? Well, I mean, Bill, excuse me. They got to get tough. Believe me, they got to get tough. Okay, Don, what does that mean? You're just saying words. This is word salad. There's no policy embedded in what you're saying. Got to get tough.
You got to be tougher. That's what you got to do. I spoke to a guy who's a police officer at the place with the thing. And the guy said, all right, see, if you let me do what I do, then I'll reduce the crime immediately. Tremendous. It'll be tremendous. We'll be winning with my strategy. Believe me. Believe me. Let me just tell you. Okay, but how? How? What does that mean? So what is that guy going to do? When you okay, so you want to, you know, have the control and then you'll fix it. Now tell me, how will you fix it? We're going to get tough. We're going to get tough. We're going to fix it. How do you fix it? We're going to get tough. That doesn't mean anything. You're not saying anything. You're not fucking saying anything. And then even Bill O'Reilly said there, I don't know if you caught it, in the middle he said, quote, you can't beat them up. You need a warrant. When Bill O'Reilly sounds like the civil libertarian in the conversation, good googly moogly, we're in trouble. He's like, you can't beat them up. You need a warrant. What are you going to do? And by the way, let's take Donald Trump as literally as possible. So what? Give the police carte blanche. You do whatever you want. You could be an occupying force. Let's go deeper into this trap of tribalism and us versus them, and we're going to control them, and that's how we're going to fix this problem. Hey, Don, they've tried your idea. It's failed miserably. Did you read the Baltimore Report? Of course you didn't read the Baltimore Report. Who am I kidding? Well, we covered in detail the Baltimore Report. The whole problem in Baltimore is that the officers were like an occupying army. I mean, there was one officer who had like over 125, you know, abuse of authority complaints against him, and the department did dick. There were countless examples of, you know, citizens saying, these motherfuckers are throwing around the N-word like it's nobody's business. There's one officer who said to a young black kid directly after the verdict in the Zimmerman case, why don't you come walking around my neighborhood wearing a hoodie and we'll see how it ends up for you. They also had no regard for the Fourth Amendment. They just brazenly violated the Fourth Amendment. I mean, there's probably an argument to be made that they don't even know what the fucking Fourth Amendment is in protection from unreasonable search and seizure. They've been doing nothing but your get tough, we're going to get tough mentality. And it's been a miserable failure in every sense. And also, they're talking about Chicago. Wasn't it Chicago that there was the story within this past year that found that they had fucking black sites where they tortured people? What do you mean get tough? What do you mean get tough? I mean, they're doing everything that you probably want them to do, Don, and they're still soaring crime rates. So how do you actually go about reducing crime? Well, there are some very simple answers to that. So first of all, you do gun reform. Now, usually people say, well, I mean, come on, Chicago already has tough gun laws, and they already have incredibly high gun crime. Yeah, that's true, but what's the problem? The problem isn't those gun laws. The problem is that in the fucking neighboring states, they have lax gun laws, so people go right next door, get the guns, and then come back in. So they act like, oh, see, it proves gun laws are bad. No, the problem is that in the surrounding areas, gun laws are lax. So if you had gun reform at a federal level, where, for example, you had universal background checks, you limited high-capacity magazines, you know, you do basic reform. Obviously, that'll help, and that'll tick down gun crime specifically. You know, if you do jobs programs, so for example, we have our infrastructure gets a grade of D-. If you go into these big cities and give people jobs and give them an opportunity to get out of poverty, well, then a lot of them are going to take it. Not all of them, but many of them are going to take it, and then you're going to have a reduction in crime. Typically, the better people do economically, the less likely it is they're going to commit crime. And then also there's drug reform. For example, if you end the drug war, if you at the very least decriminalize drugs, but it'd be better if you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs, well, then what happens? All of the gang violence associated with drug use and drug sales, gone. It goes away. How do I know? Look at what happened with alcohol. When alcohol was illegal, who got really powerful? The mafia. Why did they get really powerful? They sold the alcohol. They had a monopoly on it. So you're giving them more money, more power, more strength, and then more crimes are going to happen because you can't go to court and sue wearing a suit and tie when your business is illegal, so you solve every dispute with guns. Same thing with drugs. So if you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs, the gun violence and the gang violence drops tremendously. So these are things that you actually do. How many of those things does Donald Trump want to do? None of them. None of them. What does he want to do instead? You get tough. Even Bill O'Reilly's like, hey, dipshit, that's not a fucking policy. Give me a single policy. You get tough because I spoke to a guy, and the guy said about the thing in the place that we got to get tough, and it'll be tremendous. We'll be winning. Believe me, get tough. It'll be great. Believe me, get tough. America is winning. America, make America great again. We'll be winning. Get tough. Get tough. Believe me, Bill, get tough. All right, time for a break, bitch. When we come back, The Independent is reporting on Turkey's continued devolvement after the failed coup attempt. We'll talk about that. And I have some terrifying news here from the International Business Times on some of the problems with continued climate change. You don't want to miss any of this stuff. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back, y'all. Waka, 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 bitch.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Turkey. The Independent is reporting on Turkey's continued devolvement after the failed coup attempt recently. They explain here, Turkey has issued a decree for the conditional release of 38,000 prisoners in an apparent move to make space for thousands of people arrested as part of an investigation into last month's failed coup. The decree, announced by the country's justice minister, allows the release of inmates who have 2 years or less to serve of their sentences. It also makes convicts who have served half their prison term eligible for parole. More than 26,000 have been detained by the Turkish government, and a further 8,000 remain under investigation, according to the country's justice minister, in relation with the coup. Thousands of teachers, judges, civil servants, and police officers have been suspended. Journalists and academics have been arrested, and more than 130 media outlets shut down. So, this is a disaster. Turkey is becoming a disaster more and more by the day here. This is a really brazen move on the part of Erdogan. Now, they're not releasing the worst of the worst criminals. So if you're, you know, in there for rape, or if you're in there for murder, you can't get out. But virtually everybody else. So as long as you didn't do the worst of the worst crimes, then they're like, yeah, we'll let you out early. Why? Because some people oppose us. So we're going to lock them up. So this is being a political prisoner 101. I mean, it should have been a red flag from the beginning when Erdogan decided, well, mate, why don't we go ahead and go after teachers, judges, civil servants, and police officers? Because, in other words, so I'm going to go after anybody who dissented against me. So it's not about, like, oh, no, these people literally did the coup and stormed the presidential palace with guns. Well, he arrested those people, but he also is arresting teachers, and he's arresting judges. So anybody who's more liberal than him and more secular than him and disagrees with him and has stood up to him on a variety of issues, you're done, you're done, you're done, you're done, you're done. Now, furthermore, I haven't seen nearly enough coverage of the fact that, according to a recent Amnesty International report, the Turkish government started torturing people and raping people if they thought they were involved in the coup. So on the night when they captured, okay, the coup failed and they captured all these people and they got them fucking locked up, a lot of them were tortured and a lot of them were raped. So there's no winning in this situation. This is a horrible situation. Now, the coup itself, there are still questions about it. It appears like the Turkish government is wholly convinced that Gulen is behind the coup and his followers. I'm still not necessarily convinced that. I haven't seen any evidence of it. It's just that he keeps insisting that that's the case. And Gulen is, you know, another right-wing Islamic preacher who lives in the U.S. now and swears that he did not plan it. Erdogan seems to think Gulen planned it and probably thinks that the U.S. had a hand in helping with it as well. I mean, that's possible, but again, I just haven't seen enough evidence to convince me of that. There's also a decent chance that it wasn't Gulen and it was legit secularists and liberals who decided, dude, you've gone way beyond the pale here when it comes to being an authoritarian. So we're actually overthrowing you to preserve our democracy. So we're going to overthrow you, then we'll have elections at some point. And this isn't unprecedented in Turkish history. It's happened before, where the military overthrows the government and then eventually they have elections and they get a new leader in there, because the idea was, in Turkey at least, the military is supposed to protect secularism and democracy. And when there's a threat to it and they say, look, Erdogan's a threat to it, that's the course of action that they're supposed to take. So, you know, here's a guy who there's allegations he stole previous elections. They're not totally unfounded. I don't know for sure if he stole them, but there's certainly some evidence to point in the direction that he stole them. He does the Vladimir Putin move, which is when he's prime minister, he goes, hey, the prime minister has all the power because I'm prime minister. Then he becomes president and he goes, hey, when I'm president, the president has all the powers. He's trying to do constitutional changes to entrench himself with even more power. I don't even need to go into how much he's policed dissent beforehand. There was a young kid who ripped down an Erdogan poster. He had that kid arrested. There's a woman who changed the channel every time Erdogan came on TV. Her husband reported her to the authorities, and she's been cracked down on. So he's been cracking down on dissent across the board, and he's been inching Turkey more, in a more and more fundamentalist direction over time. But now this just solidifies it. So, you know, it could be the case that if there was a coup and Gulen was behind it, Turkey would be just as right-wing and just as disastrous. Or it could be the case that it would have been the secularists and the liberals and it'd be better and we'd have new elections. Or, you know, now we know what ended up happening, which is the coup failed and now Erdogan gets even more power, becomes more authoritarian, becomes more fundamentalist, and people are getting tortured and raped and there's just not enough conversation about it. And now they're just—they're declaring, yeah, now we're going to make our prisons political prisons. So we're going to be much more just in alignment with out-and-out authoritarian regimes and just have political prisoners, and that's the end of the conversation. It's sad, man. It's a sad day for Turkey, and I feel for everybody in Turkey who's struggling this and a victim of this. And I know they fear for the future of their country just as much, if not more so, than how much I fear for the future of their country. And I hope it all works out. But I don't see a bright light at the end of the tunnel here because Erdogan, after defeating the coup, now is becoming more authoritarian, more fundamentalist, and his actions prove it. Okay. All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about climate change and a new issue. Terrifying news here from the International Business Times. This explains some new issues involving climate change. They say smallpox was one of the most deadly diseases on Earth. The BBC estimates that in the 20th century alone, the disease took around 300 million lives. 300 million. The disease was eradicated in 1980, but a new report suggests that climate change could bring smallpox back. The bodies of victims of a smallpox outbreak that occurred in Siberia in the 1890s are in danger of being exposed because the permafrost layer of soil in which they are buried is melting. The bodies could still carry traces of smallpox, which means the disease may be unleashed after 36 years of eradication. The permafrost of the Yakutia region usually melts between 30 to 60 centimeters a year, but this year it melted more than a meter. Now, if you think that this is all hype, listen to this. They say, earlier this summer, an anthrax outbreak in the same area of Russia was traced back to a reindeer corpse from 75 years ago that had thawed. In total, the disease killed around 1,500 reindeer and led to the hospitalization of 13 people, including 4 children. So, in other words, what they're explaining is, this isn't unprecedented. Because of climate change, you had a reindeer corpse from 75 years ago exposed that unleashed anthrax. As a result of that, you had, many reindeer who were killed and many people who were hospitalized as a result of it. And it could get worse, and it could be with smallpox. Now, again, a reasonable response to this would be, well, hold on now, but we eradicated it before. We could just eradicate it again. You know, we got the vaccine, and 1, 2, 3, we're done here. Except it's not like there aren't regions of the world that don't have the resources to get the smallpox vaccine. And, you know, it's not like in fucking rural Siberia you're going to be like, oh, look, there's a place where we can get a smallpox vaccine. No. So if there's an outbreak, it obviously starts in a place where they don't have the resources to fight back against it, and then it spreads, and it spreads more, and it spreads more, and it spreads more, and next thing you know, you have a real, real issue on your hands. So, I mean, this is... I thought I was well-versed in understanding all the downsides of climate change. No, apparently not. Apparently there are many that I haven't considered, and this is one of them right here. The permafrost melting is its own problem. So, you know, that speeds up climate change and the greenhouse effect in disastrous ways. But now there's this other angle of it, which is, yeah, people were kind of buried there, and they had smallpox, and then it could release smallpox again, and are bad? Okay, we need to really, really take this seriously. Every time I read a climate change story, I'm immediately reminded of Bernie Sanders and what he said. Let's treat climate change like a World War II level threat. Now, to people who don't really know the science, that sounds crazy. Like, what do you mean? Nazis were fucking shoving people into gas chambers. How can you compare anything to that? Well, when you get all of the specifics of what's going to happen, the more you go down the road of climate change, you go, oh, I see. It basically fucks everybody. You know, so people always point to sea level rise and say, well, we're going to lose some of the big cities, and that's a huge problem. Yeah, that is a huge problem. But I always say, dude, that's like actually one of the lower problems on the list of problems associated with climate change. How about wars over water? It's a weird thing to conceptualize. It's going to happen. It's going to fucking happen. A lot of second world, third world countries have limited resources. They're already in areas that are struggling with the amount of water that they have. What happens when it gets less and less and less and everybody can't live on it, and then there are conflicts over water? That's fucking crazy to think about, dude. That's absolutely crazy to think about. What happens when food prices shoot through the roof across the board because of extended drought? What happens when there's literally trillions of dollars in damage every year from increased natural disasters? You know, climate change is not just, oh my God, it's hotter and that's the end of the conversation. No, you have extremes on both ends now. So whatever blizzards that you get in some places are actually worse and do more damage, and you get these wild swings and this weather which is unpredictable but extreme. There's so many problems associated with it and so many downsides, and we're just not taking it seriously enough. I mean, you think maybe smallpox will be the one that make people go, oh, maybe this is an issue. Maybe we should do something. We got to go full speed ahead toward green technology and renewable technology and wean ourselves off fossil fuels, because we simply can't go on like this, because we're threatening the stability of the world, and we're not only fucking future generations. Now we're just fucking our generation. I mean, think about that. It's not something that's off in the distance that you have to worry about. It's happening right now. Remember, we covered the story last week. The Middle East, by the end of the century, can be uninhabitable, according to climate science. So they're saying the temperatures will get so hot there that humans can't survive. They just can't survive. It's too hot for human survival. You think you got a refugee crisis on your hands now? With the war in Syria? What happens when the entire region clears out? By the way, this may be the only argument that makes right-wingers go, okay, you know what, maybe we should address it. Maybe we should have just commented, we don't want them damn Muslims coming here. You know, and by the way, it's not just about that. At that point, it's just about resources. I mean, Germany has so many refugees now that their resources are strained. They can't take anymore. They're not able to take anymore. So what do you think is going to happen when it gets way worse and all those countries have to pour out because it's just too hot for human survival? These are real questions now. I mean, this was unthinkable not that long ago. Now it's like scientists are saying, no, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. Look out, dude. Look out. All right, now let's go to Medical Daily, and they have a really, really fascinating story here on LSD and the potential upsides of LSD. Medical Daily has a fascinating article here about the potential upsides of LSD. They say a study published in the journal Language, Cognition, and Neuroscience investigated how LSD can affect speech and language. 10 participants were asked to identify a sequence of pictures under the effect of LSD and a placebo 1 week apart. Results showed that while LSD does not affect reaction times, people under LSD made more mistakes that were similar in meaning to the pictures they saw. This means that when people saw a picture of a car when under the influence of LSD, they would incorrectly identify it as a bus or a train, suggesting that the drug may affect the mind's semantic networks. LSD triggered a strong activation of these networks, bringing to the mind more words that come under the same family of meaning. The effects of LSD on language can result in a cascade of associations that allow quicker access to faraway concepts stored in the mind. Inducing a hyper-associative state may have implications for the enhancement of creativity. All right, so this is really, really interesting, because think about it. If somebody's on LSD, you show them a picture of a car and they go, train. it's not an irrational response for people to go, oh, so LSD makes you stupid. It makes you an idiot. Like, you can't tell this is a car? You think it's a train? Like, what are you saying? That's ridiculous. So that's one reaction to it. But it turns out that that's probably the wrong reaction, because what's actually happening is, as scientists describe it, a hyper-associative state. And what that means is you have massively enhanced creativity. So when you look at the picture of the car, your brain is fucking firing on all cylinders, dude. Different fucking areas of your brain which would normally be working are working, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, you get this umbrella of terms that are not just car but similar to car, and it's like, oh, that's similar to a train, that's similar to a bus, that's like a go-kart, that's like this, that's like that, and all these things are happening super quickly, super quickly. And so you've opened up the door to untapped potential in word association and creativity. And, you know, when you read this, you go, oh, of course, how did I not see it? Because this isn't just the case with LSD. LSD, it's on another level. But with marijuana, marijuana is mildly psychoactive. So, and I think it was on, it may have been a Vice piece, or don't quote me on that, it may have been something else. But they did a similar test where, you know, somebody did word association, and then they smoked a little weed and did word association. And when they smoked the weed, they were able to come up with what it was is, they're given a letter, and they say, name as many letters words that start with that letter as possible. And then when you give them marijuana, they could do so many more. You know, so you do Q, and people say, Kanoa, quotient, and they're done. And then you give them marijuana, and all of a sudden they got 17 words that start with Q. And the researchers are like, holy fuck, what happened here? It's because it gives you this hyper-associative state, which opens up creativity. And this explains why a lot of, you know, really amazing comedians, a lot of really great artists, you know, musicians, these are people who do a lot of drugs. So it's not like it's total bullshit when people say, oh, there are no upsides to it. Of course there are upsides to it. That's why people do it. Now, sure, you can go too far, and with certain drugs, going too far is a bigger danger than with other drugs. But we should be balanced and nuanced and objective in our view of drugs and look at them in a fair way. Before, with just the fear-mongering endlessly, it's not true. You're doing a disservice to truth and reality when you try to pretend like they're all bad and that's the end of the conversation. So this is interesting, man. But as a final note, I will say, dude, it's not for everybody. Different drugs for different people, and some people, no drugs. I'm not going to judge you. If you're somebody, yeah, I don't like doing substances, great, good for you. But I'm somebody who the one group of drugs that I just can't do and be okay is anything that's, you know, hallucinogenic, anything that's psychedelic, anything that's even mildly psychoactive. So even weed for me, I get a little bit paranoid. Actually, I'm lying, a lot paranoid in many circumstances. There are a few times I smoked it and I was fine, but other times, forget it. I'm curled up in the fetal position like, I'm so scared and I don't know why. So that's not for me. And by the way, we did a story a while ago. That's actually, they say that might be genetic. So maybe it's just a genetic thing that some people can't have psychedelic drugs. But I fear, though I don't know, but I fear it would be the same with LSD. People who say, well, look, sometimes you get a bad trip. Oh, I would be that guy times a zillion. So for some people it's great, and it's the increased creativity, and it's all this stuff. For other people, you know, maybe that increased creativity takes you down a path of dark thoughts. That's kind of what happened with me many times when I smoked weed, is my mind would go down these weird, weird, weird paths, man. And I'd do, like, pattern recognition in a weird way. It was strange. And it's just not my thing. But, you know, if you want to have a conversation about uppers and downers, I'm your guy. I love tweaking your consciousness that way. You know, take something that makes you feel more awake and more euphoric versus take something that makes you want to relax and watch TV and just chill. Those things I'm cool with. And, in fact, I encourage those. Not for everybody, but for many people. For psychedelic drugs, I just can't do it. But there are definitely upsides for many people. And we'd be doing a disservice if we didn't acknowledge that. And they go on to explain that now LSD and many other substances that were previously thought to have no medical upside, there's now evidence and there are studies pointing in the direction that, yes, they do fix many of these things. Again, different things for different people, but overall you're seeing that there are advantages for some people with PTSD or severe depression or what have you with LSD, with MDMA, and you go down the list. So, yes, continue to do these studies. You know, yes, look into it for medical use. And also, you guys know my take. I would legalize, tax, and regulate all this stuff because I think it's a matter of basic freedom and liberty. All right. I'm going to go to Steve King now because he has some thoughts for us on Guantanamo Bay. Republican Representative Steve King has some thoughts for us on Guantanamo Bay. This ought to be good.
Well, this is a great big problem for
President Obama, who pledged in 2007 or 8 that he would close Gitmo. And he sticks with this mantra, which is, well, it inspires the enemy and encourages the enemy. And I could never agree with that statement. In Guantanamo Bay, and I've been there and visited Gitmo, it is a very humane establishment. They have air-conditioned rooms in a Caribbean island. I mean, that would make a terrific resort area there. They set the temperature at 75 degrees because that's their cultural temperature. They get the choice of three different choices of a meal three times a day. So they're looking at 9 halal meals that they get to pick from. I mean, everything is handled very, very humanely down there. And yet, these are the worst of the worst. These are the people that have either killed or tried to kill Americans, and we have the right under international law to keep them locked up for the duration of the conflict, which is not over by anybody's definition.
The level to which he's making shit up and doesn't know what he's talking about is off the charts, totally off the charts. You're going to talk about international law while talking about Guantanamo Bay. Dude, you're violating principles of Magna Carta, which goes back to 1215. He's like, what do you mean? We're totally within inside the bounds of international law. I mean, right? Isn't that the way it works? No, you idiot. I mean, it is extrajudicial by its very nature to have something set up and go, individual rights, human rights, you know, ability to contest the fact that you're locked up, due process, habeas corpus, having a trial. None of that. But what do you mean? No, the international law. We totally care about international law. Fucking invasion of Iraq was against international law. Don't take my word for it. Go look at the UN, which said it at the time. Like, I mean, you can't do that. But anyway. Oh, God. He just twists everything. All right. Now, let's address some of the other claims he had there. Well, I mean, come on, this is the worst of the worst there. So what are you going to do? It's the worst of the worst. Again, a deeply, deeply ignorant guy, because there's been countless reports about the people who we locked up. You know what happened? The Bush administration cut a deal with people in Afghanistan and people in Pakistan, namely many warlords, and said to them, look, we just got attacked here on 9/11, and we set up this extrajudicial prison here. Hook a brother up and send me some al-Qaeda people. What did these warlords do? Shocker, turns out Pakistani and Afghani warlords are not very trustworthy. They rounded up whoever the fuck their enemies were, and they shipped them to us. They weren't al-Qaeda. They weren't al-Qaeda. So we locked up innocent people and in many cases tortured them. And let's be clear, this is why due process is necessary. Like, it's not just an opinion that, oh, due process is better. No, it is objectively better. Why? Because you need to have a trial to make sure you get the right people. The same idiots like Steve King who scream, the government never gets it right, when he talks about other areas, suddenly when it comes to locking people up indefinitely, he's like, are they Muslim? Okay, enough. That's enough. They're guilty enough. Lock them up. Throw away the key. The government's right. What do you mean these are the worst of the worst? No, they're not the worst of the worst. It's been proven they weren't the worst of the worst, but you were okay with keeping them locked up without knowing, which shows that he's willing to stoop to incredible lows because he feels like we're the good guys by definition, so no matter what we do is okay. So if we don't give you a trial, if we're not sure, well, we meant well, so it's a wash. It is what it is. No, it's not that. And he's still maintaining to this day that these are the worst of the worst, but the evidence shows the opposite. Again, innocent people captured by Afghani and Pakistani warlords. And then he also says, well, I mean, come on, it's been Obama keeps saying that this helps ISIS. That's not true. I don't know what he's talking about. Again, this has been proven. It's not an open question. So, for example, when ISIS was beheaded, the first initial beheadings that they did on camera, and you know they made the guys wear orange jumpsuits when they did the beheading. You know why they wore the orange jumpsuits? They say
we're doing this because at Guantanamo Bay you made them wear jumpsuits. Now you could argue, well, they're gonna do these bad things anyway because they're fundamentalists who are brainwashed. I agree with that. But the idea that it doesn't aid in recruitment and help them is nonsense. Of course it does. In fact, they're refusing to release many pictures from Guantanamo today for that exact reason. They said, we can't release these. These are really, really going to help the enemy because it's not pretty. But Steve goes, no, not at all. I don't know what you're talking about. This doesn't help the enemy in any way. He just wants to shove his head in the sand, again, because he believes we're the good guys by definition, so everything we do is okay and justified, and, you know, when we do horrific violations of international law, it is what it is because we had to do it, and no, it's not helping the enemy, but again, it's been proven that it helps the enemy, helps aid their narrative endlessly. And then, also, he says, it's very humane there because it's air-conditioned, and you know, they eat food. So we give them food. Get over it, stupid lib. Okay, dude, that's not an argument. He even said it's kind of almost like a resort. Yeah, it's like a fucking resort. Guantanamo Bay is like a fucking resort. These are the ramblings of a deeply ignorant person, you know, when it comes to U.S. history, the facts of what we've done. And, I mean, look at the CIA torture report, for example. It's not like, has he not read it? Is he unaware of it? I mean, it's hilarious that he brings up it's air conditions with the right temperature, because it's actually been proven that one of the things we did was hypothermia torture against people. So somebody ended up dying, and that person was innocent, by the way. So we put him in a cold cell, threw water on him, walked out, came back in the morning, and he was dead. And that's just one example. The list goes on and on. Remember, they did anal rape. They did anal rape. And they called it anal feeding. They shoved a tube up somebody's ass and pumped food there. And said, what do you mean? We're just feeding them. This is totally humane. They spoke to doctors. Doctors were like, that's not a thing. So they raped him in the worst ways imaginable. And then they were just like, well, it's totally fine. What do you mean? This is what we do. He's not eating, so we shove a tube up his ass. Pumped food up there. He was bleeding and everything. Well, what are you going to do? No, that's anal rape, you fucking sick monsters. They did mock burials. You know, they did loud music torture. They did sleep deprivation, obviously waterboarding, but that was probably the lower on the list of the egregious things they did. Again, he didn't read the torture report because he doesn't care. He doesn't fucking care because we did it, so shut the fuck up. So he said, what do you mean we're totally humane? What about all that stuff where we weren't humane? That doesn't count. But it does count. It does count. And this is why Steve King is a loathsome asshole, because he's only in favor of international law and only in favor of, you know, having rules when the rules apply to other people. They never apply to us. So Abu Ghraib is another example. I'm sure you guys have seen the pictures of Abu Ghraib and what we've done. I mean, this guy is an apologist for this kind of horrific crimes, for these horrific crimes. It's just a sick, sick thing that somebody exists in America in 2016, who can't wait to make us more brutal, more barbaric, more savage, and to cover it up anytime it's been shown that we are those things and still continue to do some of those things today. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, a hilariously sad video for you guys. It's a Muslim fundamentalist in Kuwait explaining how SpongeBob makes kids gay. And later on, we get a douchey Christian fundamentalist talking about abortion and how that's basically like a nuclear holocaust. Oh, God. It's going to get goofy when we get back. Stay right there, guys.
Let your light shine down. you.
We're back, guys. No entrance music. That's how I roll, like a G. All right. Let's have some fun here. Okay, just to let everybody know, you're not going to understand this at all because you're listening to the live show and you don't see the things on the screen, that the captions on the screen, which explain what he's saying. So just hang tight. I'll give you the rundown, basically, of what this guy says now. It's a Muslim fundamentalist preacher in Kuwait, and he's going to explain how SpongeBob makes kids gay, and also how the Jews are behind it. Oh, God, it's so goofy. So you'll hear different language for about 2 minutes here, but then I'll be back, and we'll laugh together. That sounds good, right? Okay, let me set this up for YouTube. I have a hilariously sad video for you guys here. It's a Muslim fundamentalist in Kuwait explaining how SpongeBob SquarePants is making kids gay.
لما نتكلم عن الرسوم المتحركة اليوم وعن تأثيرها في أولادنا وأطفالنا ترى مو مثل ما كنا نفعلها قبل 20 سنة أفضل وأكثر شخصية اليوم مؤثرة بالأطفال سنعيالكم وهي يعرفونها انا ما كنت اعرفها الا قبل فتره قريبه يسمونها سبونج بوب. سبونج بوب هذه السفنجه صارت شخصيه كرتونيه اشهر شخصيه كرتونيه على مستوى العالم.
سبونج بوب
سبونج بوب الاصل فيه انه ولد عنده اولاد ربعه وبنيه اسمها ساندي مجموعه من ال... ويعيشون في جزيره وقصص مثل مسلسل. المشكله ان هذا الولد الاصل فيه انه ولد لكن اثناء المسلسل حركاته حركات بنيه. حاولوا تفهمون وياي. يلبس احيانا ملابس بنات، حركات وجهه حركات بنات، رموشه رموش بنات، دائما مايع دائما خجول دائما بسرعه يبكي ويخاف. ومنو القوي الشخصيه القويه اللي في المسلسل؟ ساندي اللي تدافع عنه. البنيه البنيه خشنه، البنيه عنيفه، البنيه تلعب كاراتيه، البنيه تدرون هذا الامر. اكثر شخصيه هذه كرتونيه عالميه اليوم، حتى اطفالنا احنا الدول الخليجيه اكثر اطفالنا يعرفونه على على حقائبهم على دفاترهم على كتبهم على ملابسهم. الدنيا كلها صارت سبونج بوب. المشكله قاعدين يغرسون خلال هذا المسلسل ان الولد مايع ترف صفات بنيه، وان البنت خشنه عنيفه قويه صفات الرجل الولد. تخيلوا عيالنا بعد 10 سنين. أكثر الآن الشركات الأمريكية وراءها يهود طبعا يعملون من ورائها عمل دؤوب وينفقون مليارات لتغيير أفكار الأطفال في العالم كله. هذه رسائل تبرمج العقل عقل الطفل، فإذا كبر يتلقى هذه الأمور بصدر رحب. ليش اليوم نسمع عن جماعات الإيمو والعبدة الشيطان وفئات الملحدين العرب وغيره وغيره؟ هذول ترى من صغرهم بغير ما نشعر كانت هناك رسائل خفية تبث إليهم من خلال أحيانا أفلام ومسلسلات الكرتون.
That was tremendous. I almost feel bad for him for how stupid he is. Oh, goodness. So, again, for everybody listening on the live show and you couldn't read the captions, you just heard Arabic and then him saying, SpongeBob? SpongeBob and Sandy? Okay, what he's saying is SpongeBob SquarePants is a conspiracy. And it's a conspiracy to make kids gay. Hello, it's obvious. Why? Well, SpongeBob, I mean, the way he talks, he's so effeminate with, like, how he talks and his hand motions and everything. And Sandy, oh, well, she's the macho strong one, and she plays the masculine figure, and this is ruining our gender norms! I never understood the obsession with, like, you must fit into a box, and that's it! Like, why does it have to be the case that every female on the planet acts in that stereotypical feminine role, and every male on the planet is like, I'm so macho, and I make the money, and I'm the breadwinner, and yeah, I'm a strong character. Why does it have to be like that? Why not have, you know, variety in life? Now, by the way, at the end of the day, it's probably going to be the case that most men still are traditionally masculine in their role, and that's cool, no problem with that. Most women are traditionally feminine in their role, that's cool. You know, I'm in favor of freedom. And if freedom leads to still most men acting like that, most women acting like that, whatever. But these guys are so rigid and insistent on order and keeping everything just like it is. And if you deviate from it, you're a bad person. Bad, bad, wrong. A man who's gay, gay, hello. Fucking cartoon. SpongeBob is fucking making kids gay. God damn it. And everybody knows who's behind it. The Jews. In the midst of an already epically stupid rant, he had to throw in a heaping dose of anti-Semitism. He had to do it. Well, I mean, clearly, the fucking Jews are doing the cartoons to make the kids gay. And then, like, what? Like, what's the end game? Well, they make them gay, and they're gay? And by the way, imagine this was true. What a terrible failure it's been. Because, what? I mean, depending on what poll you look at, what study you believe, maybe 5% of society is gay? So, I mean, I know these guys, they're convinced the Jews control everything. Those fucking crafty Jews done did it again. Well, they only got maximum 5% of the population through SpongeBob to make him gay. And he sprinkles in, you know, bigotry against Arab atheists at the end, and, oh, now we got kids who like music. Fucking assholes, the Jews making kids like music?
Like, he says all these things as if it's self-explanatory why they're so evil and wrong, but they're just not. Like, an effeminate boy. An effeminate boy. Yeah, and? Who gives a shit? You fucking... the Jews and fucking Arab atheists. They're atheists. And? Like, they never explain deeper. Like, here's why that's bad. Because they have no argument to say why it's bad. Because it all stems from their bullshit fundamentalism and their belief in literalist Islam. This is a Salafi preacher making an ass of himself. So it always crumbles. The deeper you go, it crumbles. But when you're so up your own ass in your bullshit ideology, this is what happens. You go out there, and he thinks he's being super reasonable and nailing it with this. He's like, all right, guys, let me let you in on a little secret here on Kuwaiti TV. Is everybody listening? Okay, good. The fucking Jews are using SpongeBob to make the kids gay. Got him. And the final thing I'll mention is, I have zero doubt, that this guy, at the very least, is SpongeBob's number one fan. He watches it all the time, I bet. All the time. And what's actually probably more likely is, he's SpongeBob's number one fan, and he's kind of gay. And not only is he gay, he's probably gay for Jewish men. Ooh, it's so taboo. I mean, I know you guys are fucking run the world and you're so evil, but ooh, give me that Jew ass. Okay. Hilarious. Okay. That's so stupid. How do people that stupid exist, man? It's seriously hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that people that stupid exist. I mean, that's just so stupid. Like, you're in your own league of stupid. You know, while reasonable people and sane people are trying to increase freedom and liberty for others or trying to fight disease and, you know, bring about a brighter future, give people opportunity and end poverty and all these genuine goals that make sense, morons like this are just blaming shit on the Jews and fucking saying cartoons are evil because they're making kids gay even though they're not, and that's not a thing, and you're either gay or not. Blah, 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 blah. He's just so stupid. I can't take it. Okay. All right, let's go to Good Morning America for a little bit of controversy here. Interesting. Good Morning America. Blah, blah, blah. Learn how to speak. Good Morning America host Amy Robach is in a little bit of trouble after she slipped up live on air. Let's watch and see what some people are angry over.
You know, hopefully for Zendaya, she gets the role because she certainly hasn't bandied about now.
Yeah, no, give
my girls a reason to go.
She's fantastic. Now, we all know Hollywood has received recent and quite a bit of criticism for casting white actors, but one might assume this should be a role reserved for colored people. Is this potentially the industry trying to right itself, doing something right? And what?
Okay, so I don't know if you caught it there. She said the term colored people, and Mediaite explains further. The GMA crew was discussing the potential casting of mixed-race actress Zendaya to portray the historically white and red-haired Mary Jane Watson. All agreed the casting was a good one and a step forward for minority casting. She later went on to apologize for saying the term colored people. She said it was a mistake and she's not bigoted. And by the way, in the conversation, like I just said, she was like, oh, yeah, why not? I'm in favor of Zendaya playing the role of Mary Jane Watson, who historically, again, has been white and red-haired. So is she a bigot? No, I don't think she's a bigot at all. And for those of you who forgot or never knew, which is totally understandable, apparently the term that is wrong and not allowed is colored people, because they used to call colored people, you know, back in the day in Mississippi, colored folk, colored people. But today, don't ask me how this one made a comeback or how this variation suddenly became okay. People of color is totally fine. Okay, I have to say, the rules just don't make sense. I mean, that's not even, like, that's not an open question. It's clear they don't make sense because those are the same thing. If you say colored people, everybody goes, that is offensive. Okay, but saying people of color is literally the same thing as saying colored people. You just flipped the way you're saying it. So what could possibly be the argument that saying it one way is offensive and saying it the other way is not offensive? Well, again, I just gave it to you. The idea is that, well, colored people back in the day, they said that in racist times, yada, yada, which is true. But then why would people of color make a comeback in any way? And why did that ever become okay? Because that's saying the same thing as colored people. So don't ask me to make sense of the rules because I don't get the rules. So here's, you know, my take on this. If/when people, and it wasn't that many, but there were some on Twitter who were calling her racist and a bigot. If you really harp away on this and say shit like this is bigoted and racist, you're doing a massive disservice to real cases of bigotry and racism. Because it's obvious that this poor woman is not a bigot or a racist. It, you know, like I said, she's in favor of, you know, having more diversity in movies and music. She apologized for it. I don't even think she had to apologize for it. By the way, I don't even think if she was not in favor of, you know, Zendaya playing this role, that would necessarily make her a bigot. But anyway, it's clear that she's not a bigot. But when you say shit like this is bigoted, you make it hard for real, you know, activists fighting for justice and equal opportunity and equality under the law. Because then if you lump this in the same category as, you know, the fact that black families inherit about $11,000 and white families inherit over $120,000. If you say, well, that's the same thing, racist, racist. Well, then you just cheapen the fact that, you know, systemic racism has led to black families inheriting so much less wealth. It's not that, oh, they just didn't work as hard as white folks. No, dipshit. It's that you go back one generation and you're in the 60s and they were second-class citizens by law in the segregated South. So they didn't have the opportunities, they couldn't gain the wealth to pass on the wealth to the next generation. You know, the marijuana statistic and the drug statistic we always bring up, white people, black people use drugs at the same rate, black people are four times more likely to get arrested for it. Well, what other, you know, lens is there to look through than race in that respect? Same drug, about the same usage. Black people are arrested four times more often. White people much more likely to sell drugs. Black people much more likely to get arrested for selling drugs. It's because in some communities there's over-policing, and in other cases there's just not as many police. I've told the story, me growing up in New Rochelle, New York, you know, the North End is more white, more affluent. The South End is a bigger minority community. You go to the South End, you could be smoking a joint on, you know, minding your business, and you get arrested immediately. On the North End, we had parties where people would literally be doing keg stands in the front lawn and fucking in the bushes. Cops would never drive by. Nobody would get arrested ever. And my buddy lived next to a judge. That judge never decided, you know what, I must stop this debauchery. Whatever, they're affluent white kids. It is what it is. They're just doing what they do. Black kid on the South End, tackle him, bring him to jail. He has a record. His life is likely ruined. White affluent kid on the North End, whatever. So understand that when you say this is racist, you're cheapening all the actual cases of racism, and you're making it so otherwise normal people roll their eyes and go, again, you say something's fucking racist, it's not racist. And it really isn't. This poor woman isn't racist. And understand, we got to use common sense when it comes to the evolution of language and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. Every reasonable person on the planet understands why the N-word, white people saying that, is not cool. Everybody gets that. You know, there are other terms where you say, well, that one, we get it. Like, there's a taboo for a reason against certain words. But are there times when the PC police and language police go way too far? Yes, yes. So, for example, I've given this case before. People used to call, you know, undocumented immigrants illegal aliens. And then the argument became, well, number one, a person can't be illegal. An act is illegal, so it's not an illegal person. So you can't call them illegal because that dehumanizes them. You have to call them, or you could call them an illegal immigrant, not alien, because alien, foreign, scary, so the terms are bad. Don't use illegal alien, use illegal immigrant, it became. Well, then it became, well, like for the reasons I described, illegal is bad too, so call them undocumented immigrants. So it went from illegal alien to illegal immigrant to undocumented immigrant, and then give it 3 years, it'll change again. And because people will go, I used the wrong word, man. I'm going to have to declare unilaterally, universally, you're a bigot. Like, so another one. Retarded. It went from, you know, mentally retarded to mentally handicapped to mentally disabled to differently abled. It's like, okay, you move it every few years, and then when you move it, you declare that the people who don't move at the exact same time that you move are by definition bigoted. I don't believe that. That is not true. Those people are not bigots. At some point, I think it does make sense to draw a line and say, now you're just being a douche. And am I allowed to say that one? Is that one rude to vaginas? Is that sexist because some women douche and calling it a douche is implying douches are bad and therefore vaginas are bad and therefore women are bad? See, it's never ending. Anything can be offensive if you draw out a long enough, convoluted enough, complex enough argument. Anything can be offensive or bigoted or wrong, but it's all in your mind. Yes, there are some that are genuinely that for historical reasons. And it's common sense where every sane person agrees. White people, just be cool. Don't say the N-word. General rule, okay? You know, you might not like it that there's a double standard that black people can say it and white people, you know, can't say it or it's not cool when you say it. But there's a reason for that. You know, it kind of makes sense. So that's one example. But then there's so many on the other side, too, of, well, now you're just changing the language every, you know, few years and yelling at everybody, calling them a bigot when they don't catch up. There are some that I'm not going to budge on. I'm just not going to budge on some of them. Sorry. And that doesn't make me a bigot. That makes me somebody who, yes, at a certain point you draw a line and say, now you're just against free speech. Where anybody says anything and you call them a bigot, you call them a racist. How about on issues like this specifically? So this woman saying colored people when she meant to say people of color and just getting the wires mixed up and forgetting what's cool and what's not. How about on issues like this, you go by intent. Did she mean it? Did she not mean it? Is she somebody who really is deep down in her heart agreeing with Bull Connor and racist Alabama sheriffs in the past? No. Is she somebody who even harbors a little bit of, you know, bigotry? Well, there's no evidence of that. Again, I think this was a genuine slip-up and she meant to say people of color. So context matters, perspective matters, all the evidence matters. And when you take somebody who's, you know, their heart's in the right place, they believe open-minded, tolerant things, and then you try to pretend like they're bigoted and racist, you're the one that's doing the disservice. You're the one that's becoming the speech police, and you're the one that's gone too far. And yes, it is fair to call you the authoritarian left or social justice warriors, that pejorative term that people use to describe these folks. I think that's true. I think there's a place in the conversation for what's cool and not cool to say. The evolution of language is a thing that's going to happen, but there are some that go way too far with it and smear all that don't immediately agree with exactly their wording as bigoted or racist. I think that's unfair, I think that's counterproductive, and I think it's dead wrong. All right, now let me get to this asshole talking about abortion. Evangelical TV host James Baker made some comments on abortion this week, and this is pretty much as douchey as it gets.
Do not have to kill our children. We have killed our future, and we're making it sound like anybody who speaks out against it is evil.
Yeah.
America has turned. They're saying good is evil and evil is good. Why do I say that? Because that's what the Bible warns will happen in the last days. We are there now.
Yes, we are.
Now. Right now. That they're fighting that for the right to kill babies? I keep saying, if an atomic bomb dropped on America, it wouldn't do any more damage than what abortion has done. Atomic bomb could kill 60 million people. It would take a big bomb. It would take a big explosion. But think of it.
No, thanks. I don't want to think of it. I don't want to think of it. Come on, man. People who are this lost in their reasoning are scary people. You're comparing dropping a nuclear bomb, an atomic bomb, and killing 60 million people. You're comparing that to abortion. I mean, you want to talk about cheapening the lives of the human beings with the atomic bomb that get hit by the atomic bomb. That's exactly what you're doing here. Stop pretending abortion isn't a nuanced issue. Stop pretending abortion isn't a nuanced issue. So, people often bring up the number. It was 54 million. They might say 60 million now. I don't know exactly what the number is, but they go, there's been that many abortions in the U.S. since Roe versus Wade, and they literally compare it to a Holocaust. That's what they do. They act like it's the same as the fucking Nazi Holocaust. Okay, understand, over 90% of abortions in the U.S. happen before 20 weeks. Over 80% happen before 12 weeks. You know what that means? Over 90% happen before there's even the creation and development of the nervous system in the fetus. You know what that means? Zero pain, zero consciousness. This is fundamentally different, clearly, from murdering a fully developed human being in an atomic explosion, you jackass. Nope, nuance is irrelevant. Guys, don't get me wrong. And so do I say there's no conversation to be had about abortion. No, I've given you guys my take on it. You know my take on it. I consider myself a moderate on the issue. So I think it's 100% the choice of the woman up until the creation of the nervous system, which is about 23 weeks. And then after that, I'm fine with the individual states regulating it as they deem appropriate. And me personally, what do I support is that after 23 weeks, you know, you have exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother if it's in danger, and a fatal defect in the fetus, so the fetus won't make it anyway. But outside of those exceptions, yeah, after 23 weeks, I wouldn't be in favor of you do it for any reason. That's already the policy in the U.S., so I agree with Roe versus Wade and the policy we have in the U.S. It's like a moderate pro-choice stance. But these guys, what he wants to do is smear people like me, smear people who have a nuanced opinion, smear people who are pro-choice as saying, well, you're basically in favor of the Holocaust. You're basically in favor of dropping a nuclear bomb on, you know, people right now in America. No, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. That's the obvious straw man in human history, and you're refusing to acknowledge the complexity and the nuance of the conversation. At what point do you say it's unethical and it's not right? When it's one cell? As Bill Maher's joke said, when it's a pile of goo? Before the man can even light a cigarette, you say there's a third person in the room with Second Amendment rights? Are you that silly to believe that? When it's one cell, how about when it's two cells? When it's four cells, is that still equal to, you know, your life? Is that equal to you? Is that exactly the same, even though it's literally not the same in any conceivable way? No, again, it's a smear tactic, and this is somebody who's TFG in his thinking, and there's no hope for him. He's got his mind made up, and he's got his mind made up for theological reasons and religious reasons, even though the Bible does not say that abortion is wrong. In fact, it says the wife should get an abortion if she cheats on the husband and she has a baby with the person she cheated with and she gets pregnant. They say, well, in that case, drink the bitter water, which is a poison which will make you miscarry. That's an abortion. They say, you do that, do that. They're saying you should do that in that scenario. He didn't read the Bible, doesn't care about it. Either way, he's brainwashed into his own fundamentalism, and he's up his own ass with his conservative ideology, and he's not interested in any kind of reasonable conversation. He's just a smug loser and also a con artist, as has been proven previously, because this guy was big in the 80s, and then he had to go to jail for his multiple scams. Okay, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. Tomorrow, same time, same place. You know the deal. Much love. We'll have an awesome Wednesday show for you. Mwah. I'm out. Peace.